Okay, imagine this for a second. What if the exact things you do to really push for better performance at work could also maybe lessen stress? Sounds almost too good to be true, right? Like a bit of a fantasy. But our deep dive today, looking at this, well, this really interesting set of sources you brought together, it suggests it's not just possible. It seems like they're deeply connected. So we're really zeroing in on how this idea of a peer-driven culture in an organization might be the key to unlocking better psychological health, safety, and, productivity too. And apparently this whole line of inquiry started kind of by chance, a happy accident, as one author put it. They fed Google's notebook LM, the Peer Innovation book, the second edition, along with three big research reports, the Mind the Workplace 2024 report, the 2024 Work in America survey, and one on workplace mental health in Canada. And the question they asked is pretty direct. Is there actual evidence that this peer-driven culture, the kind focused on collaboration, growth, boosting performance, can it also cut down on workplace stress and improve psychological health and safety?
And the answer Notebook LM gave back was, well, pretty striking. It basically cut through all the noise and said, yeah, using Peer Innovation's models and principles looks like a very effective and well-aligned way to significantly boost psychological safety and health at work. And critically, it directly lines up with the challenges and recommendations from those three big reports. So it's not just saying this might work, it's like, here's an integrated blueprint.
Wow, okay. That's a really strong claim. And it immediately makes you wonder, well, how? How does a peer-driven culture actually pull this off? Let's maybe start with the foundation, right? Psychological safety. We hear a lot about Dr. Amy Edmondson's work defining it, feeling comfortable speaking up, taking risks without fear of being embarrassed or punished. But I think for you listening, the key insight isn't just what it is, but maybe how deeply it connects to everything else we're going to talk about.
Exactly. That's the core of it. What these reports, Mind the Workplace, Work in America, the Canadian one, what they all show together is that this isn't some nice-to-have thing. It's like the oxygen for a team that's both healthy and high-performing. The Work in America survey, for example, it draws a really clear line from higher psychological safety to, well, a whole cascade of good things. Better job satisfaction, stronger relationships with colleagues and managers, people feeling like they belong, and importantly, a definite drop in stress levels. It really unlocks people's willingness to, be proactive. They're not scared to flag a potential problem early or suggest a weird idea or just get involved in making things better.
Right. So it's not just about feeling comfy. It's about actually getting involved, solving problems. And peer innovation specifically builds this in as a core piece, doesn't it? It's one of their five factors.
Yes, exactly. Peer Innovation sees psychological safety as absolutely foundational. It sits right there alongside trust, accountability, intentionality, and growth.
Yeah.
It builds on what Edmondson established, but really emphasizes mutual respect,
Yeah.
getting to know each other. And this is key, having a learning mindset, not a judging one.
Yeah.
So leaders need to model being open, sharing, really listening. It cultivates this whole environment where asking questions, challenging things, even admitting you messed up that's seen as contributing, not as a weakness. It's about building that safe feedback loop.
And that seems to directly tackle something worrying from the MTW report, that 63% of Gen Z folks feel less psychologically safe, less confident about speaking up. This peer innovation approach isn't just saying, hey, speak up. It sounds like it's building the actual structure, the safety net that makes people want to and feel rewarded for it.
Precisely. It's systemic encouragement, right? When the environment genuinely values people speaking up and meets it with curiosity instead of blame, it starts to break down those barriers that cause hesitation. Especially for younger people, maybe just entering the workforce. It flips it from being a risk to being just an expected part of how things work. You build confidence because you see it working. You have those positive experiences.
Okay, so psychological safety is the bedrock. But like you said, it doesn't just happen. And our sources are pretty clear that leadership has a massive influence here, either making it happen or not. This seems to be where things often fall down. The MTW report found, transparent communication, supportive managers, crucial for trust and safety. Less than half of people actually get that at work. And the Canadian report points to similar things like lack of leadership training, low emotional intelligence being real hurdles.
Yeah, this is such a critical point. And it's where traditional leadership styles can sometimes, maybe unintentionally, get in the way of the very safety and collaboration we're talking about. Peer Innovation brings in something quite different here, what they call the servant leadership triad. So instead of top-down command and control, leaders become stewards. That's the word they use. Stewards of three things: psychological safety, productivity, and accountability.
Stewards, interesting, not commanders. So what does that actually look like day to day for a leader in this kind of culture?
It means a pretty fundamental shift, really. in mindset and in action. Leaders are seen as part of the team. Their job is to foster that intentionality we mentioned, empower the members. They lead with empathy. They understand that accountability, for instance, is not a sword you wield over people. It's a shared responsibility that grows best in a safe space. So this approach, this empathetic, proactive way of leading, it directly tackles those gaps. The reports found the need for supportive managers, the lack of training and emotional intelligence. It's like a practical guide for how to be that kind of leader, shifting the whole role.
Okay, so if leadership is reframed like that, then those building blocks, trust, open communication, feeling like you belong, they become even more central, right? The MTW report, again, linked transparency directly to trust and safety. And the Work in America survey connected safety to good coworker relationships and belonging. How does Peernovation go beyond just saying trust is important and actually help build those connections?
Well, it puts trust right at the heart of everything. It sees it as absolutely essential for psychological safety to even exist, let alone thrive.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about saying, okay, everyone trust each other now. It's about having practices built into the system that actively encourage honest conversations, you know, at every level.
Mm-hmm.
It pushes past just surface level niceness to get to genuine engagement where people feel safe enough to be a bit vulnerable, to be open.
Mm-hmm. And I guess this is where that idea of conversational capacity comes in, that concept from Craig Weber about balancing being candid with being curious.
Absolutely, yes. Peernovation really champions that. It's about making sure people can say what they really think, be candid, give direct feedback, but also stay genuinely curious about where the other person is coming from, what their perspective is.
Mm.
It's not just about getting your point across. It's about really listening, integrating different ideas. And when you weave that kind of interaction into how teams work every day, it naturally builds that familiarity and mutual support. And that's what creates a real sense of belonging.
Yeah.
And it helps teams move from just being polite to actually being, well, deeply connected and productive.
Mm. So moving up a level from individual interactions, that Canadian source we mentioned called for a really big shift, right? Seeing psychological health and safety as an organizational thing, part of occupational health and safety, not just an individual problem to fix. That sounds like it needs a whole system overhaul, not just little fixes here and there.
And that thinking fits perfectly with Peernovation's systems thinking approach. It encourages you to see the organization not just as separate bits, departments, people, but as this complex, interconnected system. You know that quote from Russell Ackoff? A system is never the sum of its parts. It's the product of their interaction. That sums it up beautifully. This bigger picture view is so important because it helps you see how changing one thing over here inevitably affects something else over there, sometimes in ways you totally didn't expect.
Okay. So instead of just playing whack-a-mole with problems, it helps you map out those connections, maybe avoid accidentally causing new problems when you try to fix something else. It's about designing the whole culture, yeah?
Exactly. It lets you be more proactive, aim for that systemic shift in culture. And a really important part of that cultural shift is developing what they call an alternative mindset, specifically how you view failure. Instead of it being this terrible thing to be punished or hidden, failure becomes, well, a really valuable chance to learn and grow. That's just essential for any kind of healthy learning culture, right? It frees people up to try new things, innovate, knowing that hitting a bump in the road isn't the end of the world. It's part of getting better.
Okay, now we have to talk about the big one.
Yeah.
Stress. Just pervasive workplace stress.
Yeah.
The statistics are, well, they're pretty shocking, frankly. MTW report, 76% of people say work stress messes with their sleep. 65% say it hurts their relationships. And those numbers are even higher in unhealthy workplaces. Then the Work in America survey links lower psychological safety directly to burnout symptoms, emotional exhaustion. So how does this peer-driven approach we're discussing specifically help fight that?
Well, a lot of it is indirect, but really powerful. By creating that psychologically safe, supportive, collaborative space we've been talking about, Peernovation just naturally lowers many of the systemic stressors. Think about it. If people feel safe raising concerns early, if they can work together on solutions, if they genuinely feel supported by their peers and leaders, that background level of daily stress just goes down. It connects productivity and safety because problems get surfaced and dealt with proactively. They don't just fester and build up into these huge crises that exhaust everyone.
And for burnout specifically, which seems epidemic sometimes, Peernovation has that learning achieving cycle you mentioned earlier. And the celebrating part sounds like it could be a really useful preventative tool.
It really is.
Yeah.
That cycle plan, act, reflect, and celebrate, it's designed as a continuous loop. And that celebrating stage isn't just a quick pat on the back. It's meant to be a deliberate strategic pause You recognize what was achieved. You learn from how you got there. You kind of consolidate the success before you jump into the next thing. That rhythm, that intentional pause, it helps sustain the team's energy and focus. It's a direct counter to burnout, which often comes from that feeling of constantly pushing without any acknowledgement or chance to recharge. It refills the tank, basically, and reinforces why you're doing it.
And I guess this kind of proactive thinking applies to remote work, too, because isolation and burnout are definitely big challenges for teams that aren't physically together.
Oh, absolutely. Peernovation definitely encourages leaders to be really mindful of burnout and isolation for remote folks. That means actively promoting proper breaks, like really taking them and finding ways to foster social connection, whether it's virtual or occasional in-person gatherings, things that genuinely build relationships, not just another required meeting, you know? It's about being intentional, about building connection and checking in on well-being, even across distances, which actually raises another important point. How do you make sure all these positive changes actually stick?
That's a really good question. Sustainability is everything, isn't it? The Canadian standards specifically mention needing measurement and review systems to make sure these psychological health initiatives keep going. And the Work in America survey found that having regular opportunities to both give and get feedback is linked strongly to higher psychological safety. So this loops back to that learning-achieving cycle again, I suppose, and that Peernovation scorecard tool.
Yes, the scorecard is really vital for sustainability. It gives teams a concrete way to actually measure themselves, to track how they're doing on those five factors: safety, trust, accountability, intentionality, growth. It turns these sometimes abstract ideas into things you can actually look at and discuss. Are we improving here? Where do we need to focus more attention? It makes continuous improvement, this ongoing data-informed process, not just a one-off initiative. Okay. It helps ensure that the effort you put into building psychological health actually keeps paying off over the long term.
Okay, let's zoom out for the last part of our deep dive here to really grasp the sheer global urgency around this whole topic of workplace wellness. There was this article in CEO World magazine by Kate Christie, "The Never-Ending Workday is Killing Us." The title alone kind of hits you. It really drives home that this isn't just about making work nicer. For some people, it's literally life and death.
It really is. And the article brings up that Japanese term, karoshi. It literally translates to death from overwork.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about people dying from heart attacks, strokes, or even suicide, where the direct cause is traced back to extreme overtime, chronic stress from work. It's a truly chilling indicator of what happens when workplace pressure goes completely unchecked.
And the scary thing is, it's not just a phenomenon in one country. The numbers are, well, they're deeply concerning. In 2023, Japan officially recognized 883 deaths from karoshi, a record high, but this is a global issue. A 2024 WHO report, looking back at 2016 data, estimated around 745,000 deaths globally that year resulted directly from working long hours. And that number was up nearly 30% since the year 2000. It's like this quiet epidemic of overwork that's just growing.
Mm-hmm. And the WHO report breaks down the health risks too. It found that working 55 hours or more per week leads to a 35% higher risk of having a stroke and a 17% higher risk of dying from heart disease compared to working a standard 35-40-hour week. These aren't just vague possibilities. They're specific, documented, life-threatening health outcomes directly linked to how much people are working and the stress involved.
And then there's the economic side. Beyond the absolutely tragic human cost, the hit to productivity is enormous. Globally, the estimate is something like 12 billion working days lost every single year because of stress-related conditions like depression and anxiety, and the cost, a staggering US $1 trillion a year. So this isn't just a people problem or a moral issue, though it absolutely is both. It's a massive economic issue too. It really provides that compelling why now for organizations to take this seriously.
So wrapping this all together, what we've really seen throughout this deep dive is that striving for high productivity and genuinely caring for employee wellness, they aren't opposing forces. Not at all. In fact, they're deeply linked. They reinforce each other. And this peer-driven approach, drawing from Peernovation and backed up by these big reports, it offers a really practical, integrated way to achieve both.
Yeah, this deep dive definitely seems to lay out a pretty clear path for organizations. It's about weaving together that empathetic leadership, strong psychological safety, deliberate collaboration, and that commitment to always learning and improving. It fundamentally reframes it away from either performance or people towards understanding that investing in your people is how you drive sustainable performance. It creates a healthier, more resilient system overall.
Right. And making that kind of transformation actually happen, it really comes down to three key things, doesn't it? First, the organization has to be genuinely ready for that kind of deep cultural shift. Second, You absolutely need dedicated leaders who will champion it, live it, model it. And third, you need consistent, committed application of these principles everywhere in the organization. It can't just be a poster on the wall.
Absolutely. So considering everything we've discussed, the human cost, the economic cost, the sheer scale of workplace stress highlighted by things like Karoshi and those global statistics, maybe the real question for leaders listening isn't if your organization can afford to prioritize psychological health and safety. Maybe it's, can you really afford not to? What's the potential cost, human and financial, Dabrev, of waiting even another minute to take meaningful action, given everything we now know?